From the studios of KPCW in Park City, it's The Mountain Life, Healthy Living in the Wasatch. It's the weekly program about health, nutrition, fitness, and all things lifestyle. I'm Lynn Ware-Peak.
And I'm Chris Cherniak, sitting in for Tim Henney today. Today we start the program by talking about optimized fat metabolism and a talk this evening on that topic. We are joined by Karen Carestia of Alpine Apothecary and Peter Defty of Vespa, who's a pioneer in the fat adaptation for athletic performance. This is some science on how we metabolize fat for endurance.
And then, once you've got your endurance in order, you may be thinking about how you can run more efficiently. Marlene Hatch, who runs Park City Hospital's physical therapy department, will stop by to talk about an upcoming running clinic on April 22nd.
And finally, Dr. Terry Walls. You may remember her from another interview on The Mountain Life. She's the doctor who finds herself diagnosed with multiple sclerosis. As it progresses quickly, she ends up in a wheelchair, and through her decision to not be wheelchair-bound, her fascination with medicine and background as a doctor, she develops a protocol, the Walls Protocol, that gets her out of that wheelchair and back leading a normal life. She's back with a new book on that protocol and the food and recipes that many of her followers have asked for. You do not want to miss this conversation.
This is The Mountain Life. Stay with us. We'll be back after these words from our underwriters.
Coming out of the cold and warm up with a great film at the Park City Film Series and a bowl of the best popcorn in town. Hi, this is Katie Wang, inviting you to come on over to the Jim Santee Auditorium to see the finest in independent film in a unique community setting. Join us on Friday and Saturday nights at 8 p.m. or Sundays at 6 p.m. Full film schedule at parkcityfilmseries.org. The Park City Film Series is a member-supported nonprofit organization and supporter of KPCW.
This is Brenda with Republic Services, your local provider for recycling and garbage collection. Information about what is acceptable to put in your curbside recycling bin can be found at summitcountyrecycles.org. Please help Summit County be clean. Remember to recycle.
Welcome back. It's The Mountain Life, Healthy Living in the Wasatch. I'm Lynn Ware-Peak, here with my guest co-host, Chris Cherniak, Tim Henney.
Thanks for having
assignment.
Me.
Thanks for sitting in for Tim while he's
my
out.
Pleasure.
Always love to have you. Okay, so you've heard that we use fat during endurance endeavors and glucose or carbs during short bursts, right? Okay. Mm-hmm. Anyone who has trained for long endurance events knows the importance of being able to burn those stores of fat. Well, what if you could optimize the fat burning, and what if you could enhance strategic carbohydrate use? Could you go longer? Could you go faster? Maybe recover better? Well, let's explore this topic with our guest, Peter Defty, who uses science to bring us something called OFM, or Optimized Fat Metabolism. He's joined in the studio by Karen Carestia of Alpine Apothecary, who has brought Peter to town to speak on this topic this evening at 6 p.m. at the Miners Hospital. Good morning to both of you, Karen and Peter.
Good Thanks. Morning.
Great to have you. Okay, so Karen, let's start with this, and I'm going to maybe brag on you a little bit to begin with. I feel so much faith in the work that you do, and so anytime you bring someone to town for a talk, I know it's important stuff. So I want to ask you why you've signed on to this whole concept of fat adaptation, both as a healthcare practitioner and an endurance athlete yourself.
So about 4 years ago, I stumbled upon a book called The Art and Science of Low Carbohydrate Living, and it outlined how our bodies really are traditionally geared to access fat as our fuel, which really, if you think evolutionarily, it makes more sense that we should be able to go out, work, hunt, do all the things that people did all day without eating, where modern society now has us thinking we need to have snacks with us all the time. So that book fascinated me, and I shifted my eating towards being a low-carb diet. I loved how I felt. and I really felt like I could go out. Bonking was not an issue for me working out. So just feeling great myself and doing more reading and realizing there are some very real health benefits longevity-wise. There's reduced inflammation, reduction of insulin, normalization of glucose levels, even sometimes optimization of cholesterol profiles that beyond athletics are very important in our modern society, because we're all – these are issues that are really becoming more problematic. So 2 years ago, we had Dr. Stephen Finney, one of the authors of that book, was mm-hmm. here, and you were kind enough to interview him. And I got roped in last summer into doing an endurance event by my my brother talked me into it. And I thought, well, this will be a great
experiment. Twisted your arm.
Very much so. I thought this will be a great experiment to try out low carb for an endurance event. And they talked about Vespa, this product, in the book. And I thought, I'm going to try this. And I did. I used it during the event. And it was mind-blowing how not sore I was, which was totally unexpected. You know, I would think that if you're on the bike for 14 hours, you're going to be sore the next day. Mm-hmm. I felt nothing. And so I feel strongly that this can be a really good tool for helping people move towards fat utilization.
Okay.
And I just want to stress, too, it's not just for endurance athletes. My motivation to bring Peter to town is to for people who are struggling with glucose issues, like their doctors telling them your hemoglobin A1C is starting to go up, you need to be watching your blood sugars, or people with cholesterol issues. It's these health issues as well.
Right. Okay. So, Peter, and as Karen is talking, I am reminded, and maybe we're still reeling in this generation, in my generation, from back in the 80s when we were told to eat like 90% carbohydrates if we were athletes. And we find now that we might get short bursts of energy, but you brought up the word bonking. At the end of the day, bonking was something that happened in a big way during the 90s when we
were. And what happens to your body when you bonk?
Yeah.
What happens?
You get low blood sugar.
Okay.
Yeah, systems start to shut down, and we as endurance athletes all kind of know that. And you could be parked on the side of the trail with your bike on the side of the trail and you on the side of the trail.
It can happen in a matter of minutes? Or is
it happens. It can happen really quickly. It can come on slowly. Lynn, you probably had that experience.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. But I'm good at burning fat, so okay.
I can see that. I can see that. You know, to Karen's credit, I think one of the things the audience should really look at is what she's doing by promoting this to the level she does is this actually goes completely against her profession. I mean, I think that that's one of the most interesting and great ironies of what she's doing is she's trying to get people off meds rather than on meds. And so, yeah, the concept of fat metabolism is that we carry plenty of fat. Any endurance athlete has more than enough fat calories to run, you know, to run 100 miles or do an Ironman triathlon. And yet, over the last 50 years, since the Swedish studies on carb loading came out, we've moved ourselves so far away from our evolutionary heritage of being able to burn fat as our aerobic fuel source. And as an aside, I was an editor, reviewer, proofer for both of Dr. Finney and Volek's books. And when we met, I think it was in 2010, our first lunch meeting, it was kind of seminal because Stephen was the first researcher who said I wasn't full of dog doo because we were saying, no, it's really about the fat and that we need to work on that rather than the carbohydrates.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, we've been told sort of a big fat lie as the book.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, I have a question. A couple of things that I read in the literature that sort of surprised me. You've just said, Peter, that we all have enough fat stored to do a long endurance event. And you said even the thinnest, the skinniest endurance runners. They have enough fat. And then you talk about a bee. Vespa is the type of bee, and that the fat stored. Talk about that.
Yeah,
the
sure.
Thorax.
Vespa. Okay, so the product I distribute and what got us started on this whole OFM program, what is the product called Vespa, and Vespa is Latin or Italian for wasp. And we get a naturally occurring peptide that comes from the giant wasp in Asia, and it's as large as your thumb, and it flies like 60 to 100 kilometers a day. And I think in the 90s, Dr. Abe was an entomologist who was studying it, and he saw that it could fly 60 to 100 kilometers a day and carry a third of its weight in a food ball back. And what did this was a symbiotic relationship between two life stages. The larva feed this peptide to the adult, and the adult in turn gives it food, and this peptide allows it to metabolize the fat in its thorax.
Ah.
Okay? And because animal cells are remarkably similar across species, they hypothesize that this would work in other animals like rats and humans and et cetera. So that's the premise for Vespa. And then when I came on board, I used it. I'm an endurance athlete. I used it for my first 100-miler, which was the Western States, and it was a year it got very hot. When I came on board, we started working with it, and I found it didn't work for some people. And then that's what – and I'd already been open to the whole fat adaptation. I was doing a fat-adapted diet, so I was open to that whole concept.
Right.
Okay. And so we started to really work with it, and out of that, this whole OFM program is an outgrowth of all that. And we just learned about it. And with Dr. Finney, I first learned that, okay, there's actually some researchers out there who get what we're doing, because all the researchers up until then and even since said, oh, you have to have lots of carbohydrates. We have that. And then the other interesting thing is we can do this for any sports. Like we have people who've won Olympic gold medals in things like hockey and figure skating, because one of the keys is when you tap into fat as fuel, you become blood sugar stable. And so for intense sports and sports that require mental focus and fine motor skills, that blood sugar stability is key to being able to execute. So if you're a gymnast, a figure skater, a hockey player, soccer, or basketball, the first thing to go before you even sense fatigue is your fine motor skills.
Uh-huh.
So it applies to everything. And like when you look at this whole spectrum, it's like the analogy I'll use is when you go shopping for a house, right? You drive up and you look at the house and you see it. Nobody looks at the foundation, right?
Yeah.
But is it important to have a good foundation?
Right.
And what we've been doing is we've been building what I term as a house of carbs.
Yeah.
Oh, very good.
House of carbs. I like it.
Karen, you said you took this. What are you taking? What is this that you're taking? Oh, is it a pill, a gel?
It's a liquid.
It's a liquid.
Yeah, it's in little packets, basically. So. Yeah,
and how many do you have to take prior to the event you participated in? Is this?
I took one right before the start, and then I was taking it every 2 hours or so.
Okay.
So if you're taking, something like a goo or, whatever it is that typically has a lot of carbohydrates to keep us going, we think, during an endurance event, we just have to add a few more carbs. This does, were you taking carbs? I guess I'm confused about the difference between, the fat adaptation, not needing carbs because now we're going to use our fat, and then the actual need still for carbohydrates while you're doing an endurance event.
I'll let Peter answer the question, but okay. I just want to point out that it seems like such a simple philosophy. Okay, now we're going to start using fat as fuel.
Yeah.
But when you really start to think about it and what are you going to take in and when? And it's very complicated. And that's where Peter is just such a wealth of knowledge. He can speak to all the different nuances on how to do what. And what I appreciate with his approach as well is recognizing that carbohydrates at very strategic times can really be a benefit.
Yeah. Okay. So, the thing is when you build that fat-burning base and you start to take up that aerobic spectrum with fat, you're tapping into that sustainable energy supply. And like if you want to do a push or you have a climb coming, I'm assuming you're a mountain biker or a runner.
Yeah.
When you want to do, say, a climb and you want to hammer it, you know, 10 minutes before, you'll pop a gel, take a little salt in, start sipping on water. So when that blood sugar spike hits, it coincides with that extra effort, right? Because when you get up towards your aerobic threshold and into those bouts of anaerobic, it's a spectrum. You're still burning fat, but now you're starting to burn, tap into your glycogen carbohydrate sources.
Okay.
So,
okay. Well, we talked before we came on the show here about how different people metabolize fat in different ways, men versus women, but even there's subgroups there. So I will metabolize fat in a different way that Lynn does or in a different way that you do. So it's not a one-size-fits-all
Great commentary here. Yes, one of the things we found and one of the challenges in terms of our trying to roll out OFM is that it's very individualized. What I've learned is it's individualized, it's contextual, and what you're seeing right now is you're seeing this huge polarization where you've got the high-carb camp saying you got to have carbohydrates to perform, which has some truth to it, but you also have this whole keto, fat-adapted community, and they're like saying it's the fat, you got to stay low carb, and it's really much more nuanced. And even like for each person, how they get themselves back to that natural fat burning physiology that we're meant to have can be very different. And so, you know, the modern world, it's like I say, it's the environment, stupid, because we've altered our environment so far away from the environment in which humans were shaped that it really kind of undoes us in interesting ways.
Well, so is there a way then to profile different individuals prior to, taking this compound or doing something else Chris, you're this type of fat metabolizing source?
I sell the Vespa product, and I think it's a great product, but what we've seen was kind of sporadic. But when we got people to consistently do everything, it includes taking the product,
right,
we saw these game-changing things where people were running. I have one athlete who's a tall guy like me who ran a very fast competitive 100-miler, second place, 6 foot guy, 6 foot three, and he's a medically retired special forces guy. So, he was broken and got fixed through this. 13 hours, 11 minutes to run 100 miles at a competitive high-intensity level and less than 600 calories intake during the race. Was not even hungry. He was so tapped into his fat, he didn't eat that night.
Wow.
Didn't eat till the next morning. Yes.
This is fascinating. So I have a great friend who we would do a lot of endurance events together, adventure racing, and then but some like 100-mile mountain bike rides/races. And we call him the smokestack. And he's about 6'2 and really thin. And he would inevitably bonk every time. It seemed like no matter what he did. And then I would sort of, as I would pass him, I would chuckle about these extra stores of fat I have in various places on my body. And I would say, it's my fat that gets me through. I don't bonk. So someone like my friend, the smokestack, he could learn how to adapt for fat or to use his fat better.
Yes, but how he would do that would be very different from you. And he would be, he would be what I call an addict. And it would be substance withdrawal to get him back to that physiology.
Huh.
And so that's something we really need to kind of get out there is we all know drugs are bad or alcohol is bad or cigarettes are bad, but we've kind of painted this thing where we think that carbs are actually good for us. And we have this sort of story built around it. And it's like I say, when you look at anthropology, it's not even argued that for most of human existence, we ate concentrated forms of carbohydrates 3 to 5 times a year. When berries were ripe or fruit was ripe or tubers were ripe, we found honey. You'd agree with that, right?
Mm-hmm.
We weren't eating concentrated carbs 3 to 5 times a day for decades.
Right.
And you take that further into endurance exercise where you're doing a lot of exercise. And if you're a glucose burner, you're basically essentially putting tons of sugar through your body, okay? And so when you put that much sugar, we all know sugar's bad, but we don't make that association of carbs. So it's not a question really of if you're going to have a problem, it's when and what form.
Yeah. Okay. This is so interesting. Yeah. I could keep you here for a long time, but how about we just fast forward to 6 o'clock this evening at Miner's Hospital here in Old Town Park City. Peter Defty is going to be there speaking on all of this. And I'm assuming that you get a lot of questions. So do you have a big Q&A portion?
Yeah, I like to make these things pretty much off the cuff and interactive. So if people have questions during the talk, they're free to ask them. And we'll go as long as people need to, because Karen and I can just – we can just go on it. So it's a fascinating topic.
Okay. And Karen Carastia will be there as well.
Absolutely.
From Alpine Apothecary to talk about some of your experiences. All right. Well, you too. Thanks for coming by this morning. And we'll speak with you later on this evening. Again, Karen Carastia of Alpine Apothecary, Peter Defty. He's one of the pioneers of this fat adaptation for endurance, and he'll be speaking at the Miners Hospital this evening at 6 p.m. Thank you.
Thanks. And thank you guys very much.
Yes, thank you.
Great to have you. We'll be back after this. We've got Marlene Hatch here to talk about a running clinic. Boy, we've got it all worked out for you for this upcoming season between fat adaptation, now running.
Running.
Yeah, it's all here. That's the Mountain Life. Stay with us.
Okay.
Hi, I'm Matt from San Francisco Design, celebrating 25 years in Park City. San Francisco Design is happy to sponsor public affairs programming on KPCW. For 25 years, we have been providing home furnishings for a unique Park City lifestyle. We're located on Bonanza Drive and at sanfrandesign.com. San Francisco Design, love your home.
For adventurers on a budget, the Utah Olympic Park offers a host of activities at no charge. Admission and parking are always free. Start with a tour of the Alfingen Ski Museum and the Eccles 2002 Winter Games Museums. Best of all, come support athletes from all over the world who train at the park. Open daily from 10 to 6. Details at UtahOlympicLegacy.com. Utah Olympic Park is a nonprofit organization dedicated to providing sport and recreation opportunities.
Welcome back to The Mountain Life. I'm Chris Cherniak, sitting in for Tim Henney. Marlene Hatch is a longtime physical therapist in town at the Park City Hospital, and she's joining us to tell us about an upcoming running clinic offered at the Park City Hospital on April 22nd from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. You'll get a running analysis, some running-specific core exercises, and some crucial concepts for training. Plus, you'll do it with some of the best experts around, including Marlene. She's here to talk a little more about that. Thanks for joining us, Marlene.
Thank you.
So what is this analysis going to involve? And how long does it take? Do I have to be there from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m.? It's going to take me 3 hours?
We will probably use all of that three-hour block. So we are going to look at each person and look at the way they run and try to help them increase their performance by correcting their technique, which will also lead to less injuries, and then also give them strengthening and core exercises to allow them to run with better techniques.
So I'm going to be on a treadmill or something like that?
Yes. Okay. We have several treadmills, and we'll have people on the treadmill for a little while watching them and
evaluate the gait.
Yes.
And then, okay.
So not only, I mean, I know sometimes I've been in running shoe stores and you get on this little machine and you run in place and they look at what you do. But a lot of what I do may be determined by how my, you know, pelvis is tipped or whatever it is. Can we really make significant changes in our running style based on what we've got going on structurally?
You can, but we will also have to address those physical limitations. So we may single people out or pull people off the treadmill to look at them and say, why can't they do this, and address those physical limitations or issues or adapt around them, because some of them we cannot change.
That leads me to the question, if there's some things you cannot change, are there some people who maybe shouldn't be running, or where running can be more detrimental than beneficial because
of that?
Absolutely. Okay.
There are some people that probably should pick other opportunities. However, runners love to run, so we will try to keep them running as long as possible without them tearing up their joints or causing other issues.
But sometimes you have to explain to them that, you know, you're at risk.
Right.
Because of your gait or because of your style or because of your body shape, you're at risk. you know, you love to do this, but there's a risk associated with that, right?
Correct. Okay. Sometimes we have to have that hard conversation.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right.
Or just to have them choose longer or shorter distances. Maybe they're wanting to run marathons. It's really more realistic for them to run 10Ks.
Okay.
Okay, I like that. So what do you think is the number one thing that you see among runners, the mistake they make that is easily correctable? And I guess I think about, you know, the way we move our arms. You know, some people do funny flailing things with their arms, which may make their whole body kind of torque in a way that's easy to correct.
Right. I would say probably the most common source of that comes down to strength in their core.
Oh,
because they're usually substituting for something that's not happening in the pelvis or the hips. And so you see body parts moving in directions they shouldn't to stabilize.
I like that. So that's part of this clinic is core exercises for running specific.
Correct.
Okay. So when I walk out of there, I may have a list of suggestions or activities that I could perform.
You will.
To either change my running style or manner and do some additional exercises or so, stretching, weight work or something, to benefit my running.
Correct.
Okay.
So talk about who is going to be there. I know you will. Max Testa.
Yes, so I have Dr. Testa, and we have an exercise physiologist, Julian West, myself, and another physical therapist, Casey Brady.
All right, so it's all these people on, and is there a cap, the number of people that can come?
We do. We've limited it to 30 people.
Okay.
So that we can get through all of their running analysis within 3 hours.
Good. So again, it's April 22nd, 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. The cost is it
$90?
$99. $99. Okay. And how do you register?
You can register on a website, or you can call the hospital at 658-7350.
Excellent. I like this. This will be fun.
For $199, I mean, you can come away with some real significant changes in your running style. And because, as you've seen, running leads to damage, which means people then can't run.
Correct. And they keep running.
Exactly. That's a whole nother conversation.
Excellent. Well, Marlene Hatch, thanks for stopping by. Thanks for running so quickly today.
And
again, it's April 22nd. That's a Saturday.
That's Earth Day.
It's Earth Day, yes.
Well, many other things going on.
And it's strategically after the Salt Lake Half Marathon. So those of you who are running that can still drive up the canyon and attend the clinic.
Really?
That's right. If you say, you know what, this running thing just isn't working for me after that half marathon. That's how I feel recently.
Blame it on that. Yeah.
I've recently begun running again, and it's just painful. So I think I need to come to the clinic.
At least.
See how we go. All right. Thanks for coming in, Marlene.
Thank you.
Thanks, Marlene.
And stay with us. We'll be back speaking with Dr. Terry Walls. It's the Walls Protocol. Now she's back with a new book called Cooking for Life with all kinds of recipes and other nutritional.
The revolutionary modern paleo plan to treat all chronic autoimmune conditions.
Yeah, it's really fascinating.
That's okay.
Stay with us. We'll be back in just a moment.
G'day, Ian from Campos Coffee. We're new to Park City and a supporter of KPCW. At Campos, we source our beans direct from the farmers and invest in social projects in all our farming communities. Our coffee blends are roasted in small batches and delivered each day. Campos Coffee is open daily at the base of Park City Mountain Resort. CamposCoffee.com.
I'm Beth Lohman from Park City Mountain and supporter of KPCW. Park City Mountain's Epic Promise grants and donations focus on youth programs and environmental initiatives that impact our local communities. Grants fund programs that are designed to help kids achieve in the classroom and develop an interest for the outdoors by engaging guests, local communities, and our employees. Information at epicpromise.com.
Welcome back to The Mountain Life, Healthy Living in the Wasatch. I'm Lynn Ware Peak, here with my guest co-host, Chris Cherniak.
Mm-hmm.
Dr. Terry Walls is a doctor, as I said, who found herself diagnosed in the year 2000 with MS. It progressed quickly. She declined rapidly, and she soon found herself wheelchair-bound, trying to continue with her practice, seeing patients. Her quality of life diminished. She took her medical background, her interest and fascination with science, and her disease, and she decided to make a huge change. She came up with what is called the Walls Protocol. The protocol focused on her MS and got her out of the wheelchair, living a somewhat normal life. But the protocol, largely nutritionally based, is effective for all types of autoimmune conditions. We interviewed her previously when her Walls Protocol book was released, and we're now so happy to have her back to discuss a new book. This one is the Walls Protocol, Cooking for Life. Dr. Terry Walls, welcome to The Mountain Life.
Hey, thank you so much for having me.
Well, we're really excited to have you back and that you've come out with this new book. It's full of recipes. And as I said, your protocol is very highly nutritionally based. And so I'd like you to just go back. Your personal story is so fascinating to me.
Oh, sure.
And talk about, sort of tie it into the basis of the protocol.
Sure. So, you know, I'm an academic doc, and before I was diagnosed with MS in 2000, I thought people who spent money on vitamins and supplements and special diets were just throwing away their money. But God works in mysterious ways. I got to have my MS diagnosis and experienced really quite severe disability. I needed the wheelchair. I got to the point where I couldn't sit up anymore and was having brain fog. And through all of that, you know, I created this very intensive diet and lifestyle program that got me out of the wheelchair onto my bike. And, of course, this changed how I understood disease and health. It would change the practice of medicine. And I, at the VA, where I worked for many years, I was able to do this in a traumatic brain injury clinic and then in a therapeutic lifestyle clinic. And we saw that people didn't know how to cook anymore. They had stopped cooking at home. They were using a lot of fast food, processed packaged foods. And so a big part of what we had to do was teach them a new relationship to food. And that really was the first thing that we did for folks. And that really was the most dramatic impact on their health. Then we'd teach them about meditation and movement. But really, the very first step was always helping them get their food aligned with better health.
So what was your diet like prior to around the year 2000?
Right. People would have thought this was a perfect diet, you know, lots of vegetables. But I was a vegetarian. So beans, legumes, I was still having a lot of cheese. I had some eggs. And so people would have thought that to be a very health-promoting diet.
Right.
For me, it was not, because I had unrecognized gluten sensitivity that was really quite severe.
Okay. So then you finally recognize that gluten sensitivity, make that change, and then what other changes did you make to the diet that are outlined in this book?
Yeah, you know, it's really pretty interesting. So in 2002, 2 years after diagnosis, I adopted the paleo diet. I gave up all grains, all legumes, all dairy, continued to decline. So that was not enough for me. I added some vitamins and supplements, still declined. It was when I combined what I learned with the paleo world and the functional medicine world that I created this diet that maximized key vitamins, minerals, antioxidants my brain cells needed. So heavy on the vegetables, 9 cups, 3 cups, which would be greens, spinach, collard, kale, romaine lettuce kinds of things, mm-hmm. 3 cups of the sulfur-rich vegetables in the cabbage family, onion family, mushroom family, 3 cups of deeply pigmented like carrots, beets, squash, and then I emphasized more grass-fed meat, wild fish, and organ meat. And, you know, when I made this change, it was really quite dramatic. Within 3 months, my fatigue was gone, brain fog markedly better, and I was just, it was clear I could sit up again. Hmm. So big things happened very quickly for me.
Absolutely. So I want to maybe preface the rest of this conversation by asking you the question about, you know, MS is so individual. And yeah. if someone has MS, is recently diagnosed, and I tell them, oh, I know about the WALLS protocol, all you have to do is follow this and everything will be great. That's not necessarily true, I would imagine, because isn't it with MS, it depends on where the lesions are in your brain or... Yeah,
well,
go ahead.
I would say for the vast majority of autoimmune conditions, following the dietary interventions before you start a disease-modifying drug would be very helpful to see if can you quiet all the disease activity just with diet and lifestyle. And I'd say the vast majority of folks will, in fact, do that and would not require disease-modifying drugs. There may be circumstances where you want to take the steroids, the salumedrol, get the acute lesions quiet, but the long-term question of are you going to take one of the biologic drugs or Copaxone, Betaseron, Avonex, you could wait on that and see what diet and lifestyle will do and revisit the question of disease-modifying drugs after 3 months of doing the lifestyle 100% very precisely so you can see if you did everything maximally, how much benefit could you receive.
Right.
And we certainly see that whether it's MS, or lupus, or RA, that doing the diet and lifestyle is actually very, very effective disease-modifying treatment.
So have you transitioned from all MS medications?
Oh, yeah. You know, I was off disease-modifying drugs within 6 months. And I did that with the blessing of my neurologist. He was so impressed with how well I was doing. And I said, look, I really would like to taper off, and I was on Celcept at that time, and he was fine with that. The agreement was if there was evidence for disease progression, we'd again revisit what I was doing with drugs. And I've not needed that. And I have to remind the listeners, I'd had 7 years of steady decline despite whatever disease-modifying drugs my neurologists were giving me.
Right. So can you explain... or expand on your criteria for transitioning from those medications?
Right.
Sure. And we worked this out with my neurologist, and I think it's a fair approach for everyone. Is you want to use the diet and lifestyle very completely. And when you've had 6 months of steady improvements so that the fatigue is gone, the brain fog is gone, and whatever other important measures are for your particular disease symptoms, that you and your neurologist would say, yes, things are under great control, we've had good evidence of response, then you can agree to taper and eliminate the disease-modifying drugs. And what are the criteria that would say, okay, I need to revisit that circumstance? I also have to remind everyone that the disease-modifying treatment that you're now using is diet and lifestyle. So when you cheat and you go out and have a bunch of sugar or you have some gluten-containing pancakes, that's going off your disease-modifying treatment, and then you should expect a disease flare. So if you're using diet and lifestyle to control your disease, please use it 100%. Cheating meals mean that you aren't using your diet as a disease-modifying treatment.
Did you experience that personally? Were there times where you cheat a little bit? And
well, what has happened is, you know, when I would go out to eat or eat at friends' house, they may not realize how careful you have to be with the gluten, and so I would accidentally get exposed to gluten.
Right.
Then I'd have a flare of my MS-related pain. So I've learned to be very, very precise when I'm talking to people who are preparing my food that I have a very extreme reaction to gluten and dairy, and so I offer to bring my own food when I'm visiting at friends if they aren't comfortable making food under that kind of guidance. And if I go out to eat, I explain that to the wait staff that I have this extreme reaction, and usually the chef comes out, we have a quick chat, and the chef offers like to make some vegetables, grill some meat, no sauces, and I often get a great meal because the chef is so excited to be making all these vegetables for someone.
Absolutely. If you're just joining us, our guest is Dr. Terry Walls. She's the creator of the Walls Protocol. She's back with a new book called The Walls Protocol, Cooking for Life, the revolutionary modern paleo plan to treat all chronic autoimmune conditions. And I just wanted to ask you sort of quickly about a previous interview during this hour. We talked a lot about fat adaptation and in terms of being an endurance athlete and that sort of thing. So it's an interesting tie-in. But wondering what optimum blood sugar levels are you looking for?
No, really, it's more about maintaining a very steady blood sugar level, maintaining insulin sensitivity. So those two numbers go in pair. You like to have low insulin levels and insulin levels that are stable. And so we can do this one of two ways. One is a intensely ketogenic diet, which is more fat-based, or a low glycemic index, which has more vegetables, but it's still nothing that's going to dump sugar rapidly into your bloodstream. Initially when people start this, we often have them ease into eating in our program with the goal of really improving insulin sensitivity, and getting them off sugar, getting them off flour-based products. I'm not real keen on gluten-free bakery goods. Mm-hmm. Too much sugar, too much white flour, still raising your insulin, still really not very good for us. But I'm very keen on, cabbage and onions and raw turnips and raw rutabagas, raw beet and carrot salads are really quite wonderful. But I'm not keen on these paleo desserts that are made. They're yummy, they're delicious, and they're still bad for us.
Yeah. And your book does have a chapter titled Delectable Desserts, so it's not a dessert-free lifestyle. There are lots of options.
You can have things that are incredibly wonderful, very tasty, still don't wreck your insulin sensitivity, and are actually still very, very healing for your brain, for your mitochondria. And so we do have things that, my teenage children loved and their teenage friends loved, so absolutely, it's still possible.
Right, and actually you have a different groupings called the Walls Diet, Walls Paleo type of servings, and Walls Paleo Plus. So
correct.
Options there.
So what I did, and I really think of the public health version of my approach is I have an entry level to help people get off the most harmful parts of the American diet, sugar and white flour. They can have some gluten-free products every day, one serving a day, lots more vegetables, and we have guidance to those who are vegetarian or vegan. So I welcome my vegetarian and vegan friends, and I show them how to do it a little more healthfully. Then at level two, it's much more of a paleo diet. Now this is about the quality of the meat, getting more organ meat. We add seaweed. We add fermented vegetables. And then level three are for those who would really benefit from a fat-based diet, a ketogenic diet. And then there's also sort of a level four where I talk about the elimination diet. People who have rheumatoid arthritis and involve autoimmune things that involve their joints may need to eliminate nightshades. And some of those folks have to eliminate or reduce their nuts and seeds.
Oh, interesting. Remind me what nightshades are again.
Sure.
It's like eggplant, tomatoes.
Yeah, eggplants, tomatoes, potatoes, and peppers. And I'd say of the two, the eggplants and tomatoes are the most common problem. The peppers, if you just have the, if you get rid of the seeds, many people tolerate peppers. But I don't have people start with the elimination diet because the vast majority will never have to go that far.
Right.
Some will, but the vast majority would have great healing on either level one or level two of the diet.
So obviously this addressed your MS. This can help others who may have other afflictions or just others who are fortunate enough who have none of these afflictions. This is a good diet.
Right. I've had many athletes tell me that adopting the Walls protocol dramatically improved their athletic performance. and in my lifestyle clinic, we've had people, you know, with rheumatoid arthritis, with lupus, with psoriasis, myasthenia gravis, all have really very nice regression of their disease, and they're able to reduce and eliminate their disease-modifying drugs.
Now, you say you worked with your neurologist on this,
yeah.
this protocol. I'm going to guess that your neurologist was a pretty open-minded fellow or person that, that would agree
well,
to this. I mean, what is kind of you the know, pushback on this?
Yeah, this was really pretty funny. So he had seen me when I was in the tilt reclining wheelchair, unable to sit up.
Wow.
6 months later, I call in and ask for an appointment because things have changed. And I am in the appointment without my wheelchair. I am sitting, and I see his nurse come out walking around, and I realize that she can't see me because I'm not in my wheelchair. So I stand up, wave my arm, and say, "Hey, Cindy, over here." So I go in, and they're just so amazed at how great I'm doing because I'm walking without a cane, and they haven't seen me do that in about 5 years.
Right.
Wow.
And so I tell them, look, you know, I'm doing really great. My brain fog is gone. I can sit up. My energy's great. I really want to wean and taper off this drug. And he said, you know what? That is a great idea.
Wow.
Let's do that.
Wow.
And so he was excited by what he saw with me. You know, and then when I started doing the clinical research, he joined me on our research team, and this began to affect how he was practicing, and then he up and retired on me, so we have a new neurologist, and he's on my research team as well. So we certainly have influenced how the neurology docs at the University of Iowa are thinking about multiple sclerosis, and now some of the other chronic diseases. They're beginning to recognize that I'm onto something with this diet and lifestyle stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. So the other day I was talking to someone with MS, knowing I was going to be interviewing you, and they were talking about an improved lipid profile, possibly indicating a positive cellular health shift. What are your thoughts on that? It's a little technical, but because this person knows.
Well, this is a great question. So there is a scientist in Buffalo, New York, Murali Ramanathan, who has done some great research on a little more advanced look at lipids and how that impacts multiple sclerosis, because the cholesterol in the fats that are in the cell membranes are necessary to make myelin. Mm. And so we really need to understand our fat metabolism to know if we can repair our myelin. So Murali is really fascinated by my work. He's joined our research team. He will be analyzing a bunch of the frozen specimens from our initial prior two studies, and we are now freezing blood to do some analyses in our current study. So we are, I completely agree, lipids are a big issue in can the brain repair itself, and I'm working with some of our basic scientists to understand how our protocol is improving and changing how the body handles lipids.
Okay. So when we talk lipids, we talk cholesterol. You know, there are a lot of new beliefs about cholesterol, that it's really your ratio that's so important. And when you're talking about repairing the myelin sheath, which is sort of what defines the MS, right, is that it's the breakdown of the myelin sheath. What's the cholesterol? I mean, is the more good cholesterol the better?
Or? You know, so we originally thought total cholesterol was the villain, and then we got more refined. There's LDL cholesterol, good cholesterol, HDL cholesterol. Then we got even more refined particle size, particle number for the good cholesterol, the bad cholesterol. And we begin to realize that it's the damage to the cholesterol molecule that becomes very damaging to our blood vessel walls. And these cholesterol molecules get damaged by too much sugar. They get damaged by bacterial and viral particles because that's part of the immune function. They get damaged by lead or mercury, again, because it's part of the immune function trying to get that harmful stuff out. So the key that many of us are beginning to recognize is we need to protect our cholesterol molecules from getting damaged so they don't become damaging to us. So what are some of the things that we need to do? Get rid of the sugar. And then get rid of the low-grade inflammation. So simple things like brushing and flossing your teeth are incredibly powerful. And then lead and mercury reduce your exposure, improve your body's ability to process and eliminate that stuff. That's where those sulfur-rich vegetables that I push are so very powerful.
And again, so what are the sulfur-rich vegetables? I'm writing this down.
Cabbage family.
Cabbage
so
family.
Cabbage, broccoli, cauliflower, and then onion family, onions, garlic, shallots, chives. That's really helpful. And add some seaweed because you want to have a little bit of iodine. If you're insufficient in your iodine, it's much harder to get rid of these things. Having seaweed flakes as part of your cooking spices can be a delicious way to get some seaweed into your meals.
I'm writing that down.
Okay.
Seaweed flakes. Never heard of
yeah.
them.
Thank you.
Yeah, you know, if you go to the Maine Coast Sea Vegetables, they have a variety of seaweed flakes that you can get. So I get little bags of seaweed flakes, and I'll put like a teaspoon of flakes into my soups and stews. And my family just loves the flavor that the seaweed adds. You can get red seaweed. You can get brown seaweed and kelp. You can also get the seaweed mixed flakes. So they have a bunch of products. It's a great company. I really like them a lot.
Great.
Thanks.
Okay, so I have one final question. We're almost out of time. But again, the other day, speaking with this person who has MS, I assume this is a drug, and I won't be able to pronounce it very well, so I'll slaughter it. Then you'll laugh and then tell me all about it. Ocrelizumab.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So there's a new drug. People, I believe, were very excited, just released. There's some benefit with progressive MS who's not had a drug option. I did a Facebook Live about it when it came out. The observation that I want to remind everyone is we studied progressive MS, and we're able to show improved fatigue, improved mood, improved quality of life, improved cognition. And in many of these folks, we're able to improve the hand coordination and their walking speed and walking function.
Wow.
Without serious side effects.
Right.
So my advice to people with progressive MS is the following. One, you know, get the Walls Protocol, get the Cooking for Life book, implement the diet and lifestyle 100%. If that doesn't work, then you could think about these new drugs. You could think about adding a stem cell treatment from some of the fat stem cells. Because they have some impressive results, but they have to do stem cells every month if people don't change their life, which is incredibly expensive and a surgical procedure. Better to change your diet and lifestyle. And then for 3 months, see how far you can get. If you didn't get the way as far as you wanted, my best advice is to go see someone who is a functional medicine doc who can personalize the protocol. You can think about drug therapy, but I would not do drug therapy first.
Excellent. Dr. Terry Walls, it's the Walls Protocol, Cooking for Life. Thank you so much for joining us today on The Mountain Life.
Yeah, thanks so much.
Thank you.
And we want to thank our underwriters today, the Utah Olympic Legacy Foundation, Destination Hotels Utah, Park City Mountain, San Francisco Design, Berkshire Hathaway Home Services Utah Properties, Park Meadows Country Club. And we'll take a quick break here.
Additional funding for programming on KPCW has been provided in part by AMA Waterways and Park City Air, Cruise, and Travel, 565-4730, parkcityaircruiseandtravel.com. Long, Reimer, Weiniger, Bepler, Estate Planning, Family Law, lrw-law.com, and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, and listeners like you.